We weren't sure if it was the bus, so we gathered our bags and hid in the bushes near the road. The sound of the whining engine grew until the bus could finally be seen. Everyone ran out of hiding and hailed the bus until it came to a stop. We hurriedly piled on and were off. As the bus proceeded, the apprentice came round to collect the fare. I paid half price because I was under 18, but half price in those times was more than full price when everything was peaceful. I looked out the window and watched the trees go by, and then the bus began to slow down, and the trees were replaced by soldiers with big guns, all aiming at the road, at the bus. They asked everyone to step out of the bus. Then they made us walk through a barricade. I looked around, and in the bushes, I saw there were more men with submachine guns and grenade launchers. I was observing the formation they had and almost ran into a soldier who was making his way to the bus. He looked at me with bloodshot eyes and a face that said, "I will kill you if I want to, and nothing will come of it." The look was familiar to me. They checked the bus for reasons nobody understood. After a few minutes, everyone was on board again. As we gradually started moving, I watched the barricade disappear, and I recalled when we used to attack such barricades. I dismissed the thoughts before I was transported back to those times. There were too many barricades, and at every one of them, the soldiers behaved differently. Some demanded money, even when passengers had the correct documents. Refusing to pay, one risked being sent back to the city. Those who didn't have money had their watches or jewelry or anything of value taken from them. Whenever we were approaching a roadblock, I would quietly start reciting prayers that I hoped would aid my passing through it. At about 4 PM, the bus reached a town called Cambia, its final destination. For the first time since we left the city, I saw some of the passengers' faces relax a bit. But soon enough, our faces tensed again, and we all grumbled as the immigration officers also asked us to pay before we could cross the boundary. Everyone reached into their socks, the hems of pants, under head ties, to get the remainder of their money. A woman with 2 7-year-old boys pleaded with the officer, telling him that she needed the money to feed her boys in Conakry. The man just kept his hand out and yelled at the woman to step aside. It sickened me to see that Sierra Leoneans asked money from those who had come from the war. They were benefiting from people who were running for their lives. Why does one have to pay to leave his home country? I thought. But I couldn't argue. I had to pay the money. The immigration officers were asking for 300 leones, almost 2 months' pay, to put a departure stamp in passports. As soon as my passport was stamped, I crossed the border into Guinea. I had a long way, over 50 miles, to get to Conakry, the capital, so I walked fast to take another bus that would get me there. I hadn't thought about the fact that I didn't know how to speak any of the languages in Guinea. I became worried a bit, but I was relieved to have made it out of my country alive. The buses to Conakry waited on the other side of a checkpoint that had been erected by Guinean soldiers. There were men standing near the checkpoint selling Guinean currency at whatever rate they pleased. I thought the soldiers would be against such black market foreign exchange, but they didn't seem to care. I changed my money and walked toward the checkpoint. The border was crowded with soldiers who either didn't speak English or pretended not to. They had their guns in ready positions, as if they expected something to happen. I avoided eye contact, afraid that they might see in my eyes that I had once been a soldier in the war that I was now leaving behind. There was a dark brown wooden house through which I had to pass to get to the bus. Inside this house, the soldiers searched people's bags, and the people would then go outside and present their documents to the officers. When I was in the wooden house, the soldiers tore open my bag and threw all its contents on the floor. I didn't have much, so I had little difficulty repacking 2 shirts, 2 undershirts, and 3 pairs of pants. I emerged from the wooden house and felt as if the soldiers were looking at me. We were to present our documents, but to whom? There were too many tables. I didn't know which one to go to. The soldiers sat under the shade of mango trees dressed in full combat gear. Some had their guns hanging by the straps on their chairs, and others placed theirs on the table, the muzzle facing the wooden house. This way, they made people nervous before they asked them for money.